Hi guys, we are back again. So let's continue from where we left.
Yeah, actually, so
Jayesh, you were
yeah,
saying.
as we were talking about. No, okay. So yeah, as we were talking about time, so yeah, what's your call on timekeeping methods? Like, do we have any accurate methods or just the current methods are pretty good enough to map the time?
Yeah, so for the applications we have right now, the atomic clock is good enough. I mean, the atomic clock basically, what it does is it compares the vibrational frequency of cesium atom, and cesium atom doesn't vibrate at any other frequency. If the voltage given to it remains constant, its vibrational frequency remains constant. So that's what we do in an atomic clock. So all the GPS satellites have their own atomic clocks on board because of the time difference between Earth and the satellites. There can be a time delay, and a delay of just a few seconds can mean distances getting distorted or accuracy of GPS getting distorted by hundreds of meters. So we really need the timekeeping methods that we have right now, and atomic clocks, I suppose, are the best tool that we have currently. But there are some talks about quantum timekeeping as well. For the physicists, it's really, really important in projects like Large Hadron Collider or something. But I don't think any other application would need that precise of timekeeping.
Yeah, cause yeah, for general theory of relativity, like to prove it, what we say, some of its experiments, yeah, I guess atomic level clocks are pretty good enough.
Yeah, yeah.
Timeline, yeah.
So even the GPS satellites which revolve around Earth, they experience the effect of relativity, and they occasionally go out of sync. So there is a software update which so there is a software which needs to account for that change in time. So time slows down at different places in the orbit, and it speeds up at different places in their elliptical orbit. So over let's say an year, that time difference really starts to have real implications. So yeah, atomic clocks as well as some computer software to take care of relativity are necessary.
Yeah. So yeah, also about that, as we are talking about time, yeah, we have time zones for each and every what we say, each and every region, right?
Yeah.
Upon its longitude and all. So yeah, what do you have to say upon the GMT problem, how it was, how we decided to put it at 0 degree and.
Yes. So it's called the longitude problem, and it's basically just that. It's as simple as that. Find if you are in a random place, find your longitude. So for latitude, it's pretty easy because the Earth's axis is pointed towards a star, and you can use simple geometry to find your latitude. Like I said, wherever you are on Earth, check the elevation of North Star, and that's your latitude. But that is not the case with longitude. Longitude needs to be with respect to something on Earth, some
Yeah.
datum on Earth, not in the stars, because Earth is moving Earth is rotating around itself, and all the longitudes rotate along with it. So what I mean to say is, for anything external to Earth, the position of longitude keeps changing. So if we want to define longitudes, we need a datum to be on Earth. And there was quite a competition between the mathematicians of Britain and the mathematicians of France. They wanted it in Paris, they wanted it in London, but so the royal family put out a challenge for all the anyone can participate in it. They wanted someone to find the method to accurately find the longitude of any place, and that was particularly very important for the naval advances. So I think it was James Harrison. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
So James Harrison was the guy, brilliant mathematician and watchmaker, who created this device known as chronometer. So chronometer is nothing but a timekeeping machine, which is robust enough that you can take it on a ship. So there were other methods of timekeeping. For example, sand glass is a timekeeping method. Once you know the diameter and the density of sand, sand glass can be a good measure of time. But once you are on a ship and the ship is moving and the ship is rocking, at that time you cannot use a sand glass. So timekeeping is really the key to longitude problem. So once you need two things to find your longitude. You need the datum. You need to set the datum somewhere on Earth. In our case, it is GMT or Greenwich Meridian Time, which passes through an observatory which is near London, Greenwich Observatory. So that line passes through Greenwich. You need that. The second thing you need is you need the time. You need the exact time in London. So whatever time it is in London, you need that. So let's say you are somewhere in Africa and you know what time it is in London. Then all you have to do is find your time, your local time. And for that you can use the nocturnal, you can use the sundial, all sorts of simple tools you can use. And once you know your time and the time in London, you can basically convert distances to time periods. So as when we say that Delhi is 530 hours ahead of 530 hours ahead of London or UK, what we mean is the time difference between London and Delhi is of 5 hours. And you can, there are other methods of finding the diameter of Earth. And once you have the diameter of Earth and the time difference, you can easily plug it in and even find the distances. So 1 degree is 1 nautical mile. That is a naval term again. 1 nautical mile is equal to 1 degree of angle. And we have 360 degrees around Earth. So, one minute. I'm really sorry. 1 minute is equal to 1 nautical mile, and we have 360 degrees, and so it becomes 6,400 nautical miles to get the circumference of Earth. So you can translate the degrees directly to miles. Distances that we can manipulate or we can understand. So yeah, that was the longitudinal problem. And there was a guy called James Harrison who finally solved it. And at the start, it was a big machine, as big as a human, even larger. But over the time, he kept on perfecting it. And finally, he boiled that design down to a pocket clock. So other clocks that we have, analog. Yeah, what do you say?
Yeah, must be pretty good engineering.
So. Oh, amazing engineering. So there were probably only 30 people in the entire UK for a period of 50 years who were able to manufacture that clock. And they manufactured it exclusively for the Royal Navy. and Royal Navy, after solving the longitude problem, that's when the British Empire really spread its legs. So they needed that. It was a great accomplishment on part of military inquisitions.
I really wanted to buy that type of watch, a chronograph, but it's so expensive that you know.
Yeah, the original chronograph is expensive, but yeah. The one which you get, which you wear in your hand, is good enough.
Yeah, it's good enough, but it's still expensive.
That is also no. Actually, it is a perfected chronograph, I would say, because the things which the mechanisms did. They are being taken care of by chips inside your clock, by electrical circuits.
Yes.
Not chips per se, but electrical circuits. And to me, that's even amazing.
Yeah, actually, because yeah, if you using some gears and all, yeah, it would have error like at the end of the day, cause of the waves or any other stuff.
So normal analog clocks now use quartz crystal. So all the analog clocks that we use today have quartz inside of it. Quartz is a crystal which I think it oscillates. Again, the same concept. If you give it equal voltage or a set amount of voltage, it will oscillate at a set amount of frequency. And from that you can keep time.
Oh, that's interesting. So also, you are an amateur astronomer, right?
I'm sorry, I wasn't able to hear you, Jayesh.
Yeah, I'm saying ki you are a pretty good amateur astronomer. Right?
Yeah.
So yeah, how would you define amateur?
Yeah, I'm still learning a lot. There are some brilliant amateur astronomers in JVP, no doubt, and every day I try to learn from them. So, if you really want to have a hobby which disturbs your sleep schedule for the rest of your life, then please look no further than astronomy.
It has already affected me.
Yeah,
so it is the best thing.
Yeah, because I was a member of KGO observation group. So for just audience know, Jyotirvidya Parisamstha has a observatory in Pune. So they take various observations like of clusters and variable stars. And I think JVP is one of the most successful organization to submit those observations to AVSO, and most of them from India are submitted by JVP. I mean, so
JVP actually Jyotirvidya Parisamstha is the selected partner of IAU. So we are the IAU chapter. IAU is International Astronomical Union. We are the IAU chapter for variable star observations. So JVP has been selected to collect all the observations from all across India and submit it to IAU after proofreading them, checking them for quality and things like that, checking them for accuracy. So yeah, JVP is the organization in India for many things related to astronomy.
That affects the sleep schedule a lot, because right now
very much.
Yeah. I'm not able to sleep at 1 a.m. and 1 a.m. or 2 a.m. at night. So I usually sleep at 4 a.m. something like 4 a.m. or 5 a.m. So that has really affected me because of observations, and it's really nice because I do very interesting and lot of cool stuff at night. I read many books and also I do like this for example this podcast, and I think about many other things. So it has really given me a kind of a good thing.
One funny thing that happened to me was I was in JVP for 4 years before, I guess three, 4 years, yeah, 4 years before coming here. And the one funny thing was, when I landed here, people were jet lagged, but I didn't feel anything because I suddenly came into a country which was sleeping exactly 12 hours after we used to sleep in India. But I didn't feel the effect because I was so used to being awake in the night that it was normal for me. So jet lag is really a thing for non-astronomers. We really don't feel it. So even when I traveled back to India in December 2019, even at that time I didn't feel the jet lag. I don't know if it is about, if it is because of because of the astronomy that we do, but yeah, I think that is probably the reason I don't feel jet lag.
I would like to add the quote of Carl Sagan: astronomy is a humble and character building experience.
Humbling and character-building,
yeah. So indeed. Yes. So the most interesting or amazing thing about JVP is stargazing events. I love them.
Right. So I was introduced to the entire field through one such event. One of my friends, Nisarga, he was in JVP from 1 year, and he always used to tell me that we go outside of the city, we look at stars once in a month, and would you like to come? And I was like, yeah, sure, why not? Then he said that it is a paid event, and I was like, why would I pay money for looking at stars to someone else?
Yeah.
But he didn't listen to me, and he dragged me to one of these events. So I was like, okay, let's try. Ye bhi kar lete. Let's try. And I went to that event and I was hooked from that moment. I immediately, the next weekend, I took the membership, and since then astronomy has been an inseparable part of my life.
Me too. Like, I was nothing when I came to Pune. So I was in my freshman year, I was at SP College, but I've changed my college now. So when I became a member of JVP, so actually, is it the background noise, Jayesh?
No, not much, but yeah, very little.
Yeah, okay. So when I became a member of JVP, I learned many things because I was nothing, but I was just interested in academics. So it really developed my character, and it gave me many many new opinions or new ideas or thoughts to come up with. So I started an astro club because of JVP at SP College.
That's great.
Yeah. So I learned a lot of things from Atharva, especially Atharva.
So are we sitting with Mr. President?
Yeah.
Good evening, Mr. President.
Yeah. So it's JVP is really like best organization, I would say, for astronomy.
I mean, we try.
Yeah.
It is certainly more accepting than others because we are all amateurs and we all started out just some interested people in astronomy. We all started out like amateurs. So that's why probably it is a
yeah. So actually same happened with me. Like I wanted to do astronomy from 10th grade, but I didn't knew the actual path. Yeah, what should I do, and yeah, what stuff is necessary to be an astronomer and all. Yeah, but JVP helped me a lot. From basics till now, all the knowledge today I have all because of JVP.
So you'll find all types of people there, not just astronomers or hardcore astronomy researchers. I don't think any one of us is hardcore into astronomy. Of course, some of our members are very successful in the field of astrophysics. Two of our members are at Team Delft, and they have worked with Ariane group. Ariane, if you guys know it, it is a they are competitors of SpaceX. It is a space launching company and based in Europe, and they have their own engines, Ariane 5, I guess it is right now. So some of our members have worked on that. Some of them are just chartered accountants. Some of them work in the IT sector. Most of us are students. And yeah, it is a good blend of people, good blend of perspectives.
Most of them are engineers, I think.
Well, yeah, a lot of us are engineers.
And the interesting thing is most of them are from modern college.
Oh, yeah. For some reason, there seems to be a link between modern College of Engineering and JVP. I mean, it is nothing deliberate. JVP doesn't incentivize people going to modern college, just to make it clear. But there seems to be some kind of link between these two.
I'm sorry to stop here, guys, but we are going to come back soon with Prayag in our next episode. So stay tuned and keep on listening.